Good evening and welcome to an Author's First special on the Artist First Radio Network. I'm Richie Kay here in the studio tonight, filling in for Tony Kay, who's on vacation. We wish him the best out there in Florida as he has his much-deserved vacation. Tonight, I'm going to be interviewing the author of Accountable to None, Miss Ashley Fontaine. Ashley, how are you tonight?
I'm just great, Ricky. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. Well, let's go ahead and get right into it. And can you tell us why you wrote this book and what was your main inspiration?
Well, my main inspiration, I have always been an avid reader, and I always have truly enjoyed the classic novels. My favorite book of all time has always been The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. And I had just finished reading that book when I just got the idea for this one. And what I wanted to do was write a classic revenge tale, but set it in modern times. And so that's where the idea originally came from for me to write this book.
So in a sense, this is The Count of Monte Cristo put into modern day.
Yes, that's what I was hoping. And I wanted to also take it to another level in the sequel that I have coming out called Zero Balance. I wanted to also showcase what happens after you seek revenge, because a lot of times we don't go that far. We when people want to have revenge on something, they stay focused on just that and don't think about the consequences that are going to come up later. And that issue is addressed in the sequel. So I wanted people to really stop and think, do I really want to take revenge on somebody? And what are the repercussions that are going to happen if I choose to do that?
I think of the character in The Princess Bride, Inigo Montoya.
Yes.
When you say that.
Love that movie.
Me too. One of my favorites. He says, I've been in the revenge business so long, I don't know what to do with my life.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we as a society sometimes get stuck in that rut and don't think about, we react gutturally to things that happen to us and don't stop and think about what's going to happen after we get what we think we wanted.
Accountable to none seems to indicate to me the person who's seeking revenge, they don't really feel accountable to anyone. Is that right?
Well, actually, the main character, the protagonist in the story, her name is Audra Tanner, and she is a minority partner at a very large, prestigious accounting firm set in Phoenix, Arizona. And she realizes that the story starts out 5 years in the past when she met with the managing partner, who is the antagonist of the story, Owen Kemper, to discuss her promotion to equity partner. And she finds out that evening that that's really not the reason he called her in there. He wanted sex. And when she refuses, he ends up raping her. And so for her silence, he offers to pay her buy-in to be an equity partner. And she's already teetering on the edge of having a nervous breakdown anyway, because she has lost her marriage. She lost her child she'd been pregnant with due to her hard work and ridiculous hours that she has put into this company. And when this happens, her mind snaps, and she decides at that point that she's going to make him accountable for what he's done, but chooses to do it in her own personal justice style, as opposed to going the traditional route and calling the police and making a report and filing charges against him. She decides she wants to make him pay for what he did to her.
So a creative form of revenge ensues.
Yes, very much so. It takes her 5 years of, she stays at the firm, which some people that have read the book have a problem with that, but if you've ever been a victim of a violent crime, especially one that is so devastating as rape, it does change your mindset. And she sucks it up and decides to stay there and uses that time in that five-year span to gain as much information as she can on not only the man that raped her, but also the other people that worked there that were there that evening when it happened and knew what happened to her, yet they never did anything to stop it. So in that five-year time frame, she has used the ability to become a computer hacker, to gain information on all of them, and then the story segues to the present time, where it's the day that she gets her revenge. And she has plotted and planned for 5 years and finally has the ability to make everybody become from accountable to none to accountable to all.
That does sound like The Count of Monte Cristo a little bit.
To a degree, yes.
He's already talking about that he's got his revenge, I think, from the beginning of the book.
Right.
If I remember correctly. Well, it sounds like this book is going to get into several really touchy issues. Women's rights, for one. Are these issues close to your heart?
They are, actually. I have several friends that I have grew up with and have met over the years that have been victims of rape. And hearing their stories firsthand from them about the impact that it made on them, and each of them have a different way that they've reacted to what happened. But hearing what happened to them and how it changed them was the reason why I wrote this entire book and based it off somebody that had this tragic event happen to her. As I said earlier, she was the main character. Audra was already struggling with issues because she had devoted so much of her time and her energy, everything to this job, that she ended up losing the baby that she was pregnant with. And what happens to a lot of women when that occurs with them is that they sink into depression. And she did, and ended up losing her marriage. So she really threw herself into her job after that because that's all she had. And then when this happened, you know, she is thinking, okay, I'm going to go talk to the managing partner of our company because he wants to put me in as an equity partner, which means I'll be a part owner, and finds out that that's not the reason that he even wanted to meet with her to begin with anyway. And it devastates her. And her response to that is that she's going to get him back for what he did.
This, what you said there makes me think of the disclaimer that is on so many works of fiction, that all characters are fictional and any resemblance to real characters expressed or implied are, you know,
purely coincidental.
But can you tell me, as a writer, how important is real life experience in writing a believable storyline?
Well, I really think that it is impossible not to use people that we have met or come in contact with or even seen on such, you know, read an article in the paper or watch something on TV. Any conversation that you have with anybody that you come into contact with potentially has the ability to be, at least in part, a character of somebody that you create in the book. And to make it truly believable in the genre that I write in, you need to be able to pull from real-life experiences from either people that you know or just people that you have seen to be able to make a rounded character that is truly believable.
And when you do that, what do you find that the readers experience as a result?
Well, I hope that the readers that have read my story so far, which, by the way, shameless plug, I want to say thank you to all my fans because they've been absolutely fantastic. I want them to be able to be in the shoes of the people that they're reading about, even the bad ones, because they need to be able to experience those emotions, whether they're good or bad. And if you don't write the characters in a way where people can actually read those words and get that image in their head, then you failed as an author.
It's so important to have believable characters, and even to sort of like your bad guys.
Exactly, because if it weren't for a bad guy, then you wouldn't have a good guy to showcase.
And isn't it interesting how people are rather complex, even if they are sort of I always thought that about James Bond stories, that you tend to like the evil villain in the story as much as James Bond almost by the end.
Right, and that's the sign of a great writer, that has the ability to pull you into that character. And even though you may not like them because of what they represent, you you have an emotional connection to them because they make you feel so strongly, whether it's a good strong feeling or a very negative strong feeling. So that's what I tried to portray in this. And Owen's character, as well as the firm as a whole, is portrayed as being, and Audra refers to them as being a snake. And that's very true with real life, because part of her character not only is an individual that's experiencing this, but it's also part of all of us when we were young and we first started out in our careers and we were very naive and we really had no clue what life was really like. And most people have not experienced something truly evil. And when she does, she refers to them as a snake because they came slithering in with the promises lined with gold and the silver tongue that told them what they wanted to hear, but in actuality it ended up biting her.
Mm. The image of the snake, of course, you know, is rich with biblical symbolism. Was that intentional?
Yes, it was.
Is there a central message to your book?
In the first one, the central message, of course, is seeking revenge. It is a woman that chooses to take revenge into her own hands, bypassing traditional routes of justice, which is something that most people want to do. A lot of us want to do it, but we don't do it. In her case, she does. The central message in the sequel is going to be more of, okay, I did this. Now I'm going to get the repercussions of what I did, because she's dealing with people that were inherently evil to begin with anyway. And so, of course, you hurt me, I hurt you, you hurt me. It's a revenge cycle, and it doesn't end. And when the person that you get revenge on is already a dark person to begin with anyway, guess what's going to happen when they try to come back on you? It's going to be even worse.
Hmm.
And that's what happens in the sequel, Zero Balance.
Oh, my. So you have got the second book in the works now as
yes,
well?
Yes, I did. Accountable to None was done by me. I self-published. But I also made my own book trailer, and fortunately, through the lovely social media, Facebook and Twitter, the book trailer was seen by a fellow author. Her name is Lindsay Ann Kendall. She's out of the UK. She's a fantastic young adult paranormal writer. She saw it and decided she wanted to review the book. So she did, and after her glowing review, she turned around and emailed her publisher, which is World Castle Publishing, and they signed me for Zero Balance.
Oh, so wonderful.
My Zero Balance is with the editor right now. I have finished it. It is a lot longer than Accountable to None, and it goes into a lot more detail. And it is slated for an early March release.
Wonderful. That's coming up really quickly.
Yes, it is. I'm very excited.
Can you tell us a little bit about the act of self-publishing and just how that worked out for you?
Well, it has been a very strange experience, to say the least. I actually wrote Accountable to None as a college project for creative writing class in the spring of 2011. And my teacher loved it so much that she told me, you have a great book here. You need to seriously think about publishing it. And I knew nothing about the publishing industry. Zero. I mean, zilch, nothing. And I did a little bit of research, and I saw all the different ways that you could go about sending out letters and the whole nine yards that you have to do. And I said, you know what, I'm not interested in that. So I figured out how to format it, and I went ahead and put it up on Amazon in April of 2011, just to see if my teacher was right, that people would enjoy my writing. And sure enough, it took off. And then I figured out how to format it for Barnes & Noble and put it on there, which right now it is not available through there. I've opted to do the Kindle Direct Select program in December, so it's only available as an ebook through there. And just started, I got on Facebook and I started joining some groups, which I have been a member of now for several months, that have been just absolutely wonderful people that are just like me, that are trying to get their name out there. And all of a sudden it took off. And in December, I shot up to number 13 on the suspense worldwide, and I'm still hanging in there in about the 200 or the 2,000 range for overall Kindle sales. So it has been a pretty shocking, exciting period for me and my wife in the last 2 months.
It sounds like it. Was it difficult to get your book onto Amazon to begin with?
Oh, no. No, but they are very, they have very good links on their website to tell you exactly how to go about doing it. And
you've opted to do it just as an ebook, correct?
No, it is also in print as well.
Okay.
I just had it reformatted through World Castle Publishing. They did do the editing and reformatted it for me for not only the Kindle, but also for print, because I did have a few errors in there, because I didn't know what I was doing. And as a matter of fact, right before you called, I had just submitted the okay. So the print version will be available again on Amazon as well, probably by tomorrow.
So you just went through another round of editing on the print version of Accountable to None?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Oh, great. So if people want to find this book, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Go to Amazon.com and type in Accountable to None, and it's right there. And if they're a Prime member of the Kindle program, then they can get it for free. If they're not, it's only 99 cents.
Oh, great. Well, as a writer who has now gone the digital route and self-publishing and now has a book that has been picked up by a publisher, how would you compare and contrast the difference there between having your book published by someone else and doing it yourself?
Well, for one thing, as someone that did not know what they were doing when they first started out, it has been a blessing to have World Castle in my life, because they did the correct formatting. And, of course, the original book that I put up on Kindle was not edited. It was strictly what I wrote in college. Boom, I put it up there, and it is not possible to edit your own work, because you know what you want to say, and you, even though you're reading it, you may read what's really in your head, but not what's really on paper.
Mm.
So it has been a blessing for me to have someone else with fresh eyes go back and make some changes and do some updates. Plus the fact that she's so supportive, my editor and the publisher, and they've just been so helpful. And in March, I think March 24th, we're actually doing our first book signing, or at least I am, in Amarillo in Lubbock, Texas. So those things would have never happened had I not had the ability to be signed with them. So,
wow. So you didn't do any promotion, I guess, outside of the internet for your first book?
No, I didn't. I do have my first book signing at the local library in the city that I live in coming up on the 17th. And then this is my first radio interview. So those two things I did on my own, but it has taken off so quickly. I have people calling me and wanting me to be on different venues. And so it's kind of hard to all take in at one time.
Oh, I'm sure. And, you said you're on the top 13 of suspense novels there, so you must be getting thousands of listeners, readers checking out your book and making comments, and I'm sure that's just totally overwhelming.
The weekend of Christmas, when my book went on live on the Kindle Direct Select program, I had over 30,000 downloads by the time it was done. And
wow.
It was a big shock and really interesting time around my house with all the family here, and everybody was just, jaws were on the floor, and we were all like, oh, wow. So, yes, it has been absolutely wonderful.
Exciting. So
very much so.
You've got a second book in the works, and this is going to be a series you call the Eviscerating the Snake series.
Yes, there will be one more after Zero Balance, and of course, I'm sticking with the theme of accounting. It will be entitled Adjusting Journal Entry, and it will be the last one. It's going to be a trilogy.
What actually led you to want to set the tale in a modern corporation, corporate setting, I guess? Do you have any experience in the corporate world that led you to want to do that?
Well, part of the reason is because if you spend 5 minutes on the internet looking at CNN or Fox News or picking up the Wall Street Journal, anything that you read, even just 5 minutes of it, you're going to hear about corporate greed. BP is a perfect example of that. It is very prevalent in our society that the love of money seems to trump doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the reasons why I chose an accounting firm to be that perspective of being the evil company that is out to get the little guy, not only as the company as a whole, but also the individuals that work there. Because a company is only as good as the people that run it. And I do have experience. I have worked in an accounting firm for years, and so that's one of the reasons why I chose to set it there, because a lot of books nowadays, most thrillers, mysteries, tend to focus around a law firm. And I thought, you know what? There's not very many out there that center around an accounting firm. And plus, I already had in my mind that I had already written the first chapter where she specifically states, she being Audra, that she wants to take everybody from being accountable to none to accountable to all. So I just thought, you know what? It's a perfect segue into that. And that's why it became about an accounting firm.
Okay. The next question I had was related to what really got you started to be a writer. You were in an accounting firm for a period of time, and then you decided to take a creative writing class. What led to that decision?
Well, I fell into it. I had always wanted to be a nurse, and I was actually attending college to gain my Associate's of Science degree so I could go on to RN school. And I had all the classes, all the core classes that I had to take, and I needed a few extra classes. And I had no interest in taking theater. I had no interest in taking music. But I thought, you know what? I'll take creative writing because I've always liked to write, and I always have. But it's always been for more of a personal release.
Mm-hmm.
So I took Creative Writing 1 in the fall of 2010. And my teacher really enjoyed my work and really pushed me to want to, she said, you know, you need another class, you need to take creative writing too, because I have an idea for you. So I went ahead and I did that. So in the spring of 2011, when I took creative writing 2, she sent me a private email and said, I want you to write a novel. I think you have it in you, and that's what I want your semester project to be.
Hmm.
So that is how Accountable to None was born.
That's great that you had such a supportive teacher, too.
I did. Mel Burning, if you're listening, you rock. She has been absolutely incredible in my life, because she really pushed me and said, you have it in you, you need to keep going. And if it weren't for her, I probably wouldn't have. Anyway, I did graduate with my Associate's in Science, and I did get a scholarship to attend college full-time to get my nursing degree, but things just didn't work out that way, and then this book took off, so I am going to keep my scholarship and will be attending school starting in 2 weeks to get my bachelor's in English.
Oh, so you decided to change majors.
Yes, I did. I realized not only did I have an incredible amount of fun writing this book, but it is my passion, and now, you know, there's so many people out there, and listeners, if you're listening and you like to write, but you have been so scared about taking that next step and putting it out there because you're worried about what people may think about your writing, don't be. Because you're going to have people that don't like it, but you're going to have people that do like it. And the ones that do like it, the feeling that you get from knowing that someone else, some total stranger, picked up your work and read it and enjoyed it is absolutely incredible. And this is my passion. I love it. It is what I want to do full-time eventually. And it's just, it has been an incredible experience. So this is what I do now.
Well, that's just awesome. As a, you started to go into that a little bit, what kind of advice would you give an aspiring young author?
Not to give up at all. If it's something that you want to do, do it. But be prepared. Don't walk into it like I did, where you had people around you telling you, hey, this is really great, you need to do this. And all of a sudden being shocked when you do get negative reviews, because they will come. Not everybody's going to love the way you write. As a matter of fact, I'll give a perfect example. There's a website out there called Goodreads.com that is an online book club.
Mm-hmm.
And they rate books. People rate books that they've read. And some of the classics, Mark Twain's work, Alexander Dumas's work, works by the greats nowadays, James Patterson, Stephen King, some of them even get bad reviews from people that read them. So bad reviews are going to happen, and you have to learn to take those as well as the good ones. You will learn to appreciate the great reviews that you get much more after you've had a negative one. But don't be afraid. Talk to somebody about it. Do some research on the internet. Figure out what you want to do. And if you think that you have something out there that you could offer to people, then by all means, do it.
Great advice. The negative reviews are one of the biggest things probably that keeps people from wanting to put themselves out there like that. And facing that fear is probably one of the hardest things to do.
Very much so. But, you know, even with whether it's books or movies, you're not going to be able to please everybody. It's just not going to happen. And if you walk into that with your eyes open and realize that that is going to be a possibility, it won't hurt so bad when they do happen.
Mm-hmm. And just stay strong and, believe in yourself.
Exactly. And it's so funny how it happens. Today is a perfect example. I had 2 5-star reviews today of people that just absolutely love my book.
Awesome.
And then I had another one that said, no, we don't like it.
So 2 out of 3 is not bad.
You have to learn to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you'll have to excuse me. It's wintertime in Arkansas, and my allergies are giving me a hard time. So,
well, we hope that it doesn't keep you from continuing the interview. Are you feeling up for reading us a segment from your book?
I would love to. I'm a little nervous about doing that, but I sure will.
Well, don't be nervous. We just love to get a taste of what you got and get a feel for your style as a writer. And I'm sure the listeners would love to hear it in your voice.
Okay, well, I'll start out from the very beginning in the book again. It starts out 5 years in the past, where Audra Tanner, the heroine, she's dealing with what just happened to her. She was raped by her boss, and she has escaped back to her office and has locked the door, and she's trying to figure out what she's going to do. Everything in her life has completely changed, and she's finally coming to terms with what just happened to her and trying to figure out what she's going to do. Now, granted, you have to stop and think and put yourself in her shoes of what you would do if you had just experienced what she had. So the part I'm going to read to you is when she finally makes her decision. Her eyes widened as she felt a strange sensation deep inside her core, and she noticed that the eyes that looked back from her in the mirror were those of someone else, a stranger that she didn't recognize. Even through the intense swelling of her right eye, she saw that they were no longer the naive, innocent ones from before, the ones that had viewed the world as a place where hard work and ethical behavior prevailed and were followed accordingly by just rewards. Those had been replaced with eyes full of smoldering anger, which now skewed her once lofty view of the world and had turned them into a deep emerald green. Her mind crossed over into territory unfamiliar to her, and her thoughts became dark and sinister as she began to mull over her new purpose in life. Never had the snake been exposed for all to see, for its secrets were buried deep beneath its lair under countless piles of blood money, just like the money that had been offered to her tonight. Those piles of money had bought the silence of its victims for so long that accountability was not in its vocabulary. She would change all that, no matter how long it took. She wasn't quite yet sure how she would do it, but she would change every single one of them from being accountable to none to accountable to all.
Wow, you are a good writer.
Well, thank you.
I like the use of you've got an introspective aspect there to the character that I think is often missing from a fiction novel, and it looks like your character is coming alive right before us.
Right, and she is. Unfortunately, she's coming alive in a way that, granted, she gets what she wants, but in the second book, she finds out the price she really has to pay for what that was.
Is this main character of your book more than a victimized woman?
Yes, as I said earlier, I think Audra really does represent the naivete that we all have when we first start out working. We have these lofty ideas of what we think life is going to be like, and in her case, she was a very sheltered person. She's a graduate of Harvard. She lived a very sheltered life and really had no clue how cruel and harsh some people could be, especially when it came to dealing with money and the things that they want and not caring who they stepped on to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she is confronted with that, it is such a huge shock to her because she has worked her whole entire life and career up to this point doing things the ethical way. And when she is confronted with what the reality is of how some people truly are, she ends up flipping over into the same world because technically what she does is outside the law. And I really wanted to showcase how having a tragic event in your life can change somebody that started out young, naive, and ethical into tromping down in the same pit as the people she's trying to get back at.
Do you feel that this book justifies taking justice into your own hands?
Yes and no. One of the differences that I really wanted to make clear in this book, Audra does not, like in so many books that are written now, when people do take justice in their own hands, they end up killing somebody. She does not do that. That is not part of her core character, and that is not what she wants. She does it in a way where people's hidden sins are exposed, and I wanted that to be her way of getting revenge as opposed to crossing over into a segment of her that is not part of her by killing somebody, because that's not what she wants to do. That is not part of the core of who she is. So it does, in a way, showcase that it's okay to get revenge if you do it correctly, but at the same time, it also is going to really be brought out in the second book that doing that and taking it into your own hands sometimes have some repercussions that you did not see coming. And even though you may have not done something technically wrong, it still can come back and haunt you.
Can you go on to tell us a little bit more about the process of writing for you?
Well, for me, because I've been such an avid reader my whole life, and I'm sure most people that truly do enjoy reading are the same way, I see it in my head. perfect example, when the Twilight books came out, everybody had their own opinion, the people that had read them, of what they felt the characters looked like. And when the book was made into a movie, some people loved the actors that were chosen to play the parts, and some people hated them, simply because of what they had pictured in their own head. For me, when I write, I see it as a movie. I see the scenes as they happen. I see the action that's going on. I see the interactions between the characters, and that's how I write. I do have a long commute. I drive 45 miles one way every day to work, so I have plenty of time to think about what's going to happen next when I'm writing, and I see it in my head. So when I get a chance to get to a computer, I write down what I've seen. And that's how I approached writing this book. It is not just from Audra's perspective, but it is also from the perspective of everybody else that's involved. And that is one thing that I think that sets my writing a little bit different maybe than most other people's, is I wanted the reader to be able to get a glimpse of each person that was involved, because I see their viewpoint of what's going on. And that is also what happens in the next book, is it is told from everybody's perspective that's involved.
I see. So it's like first person omniscient, I guess. Would understand what the motivations are behind every character from their own perspective.
Yes. Yes.
That's interesting. I always enjoyed it when you get to a chapter and all of a sudden, you know, the character who's telling the story kind of is changed, and then you see the same events that occurred in earlier chapters kind of from in a new light.
Right. It's from someone else's eyes, which is exactly what happens in real life, because you can have 10 people standing in a room that all witness the same thing. But if you go back and talk to each one of them, they're all going to give you a different perspective of what happened.
Did your writing class help you at all in coming up with these different methods for telling the story?
In a way, yes, but more so of the actual way the teacher taught. She was very free-willed with what we did. There was really no strict assignments. It was basically write what you know and write what you see. And so that's really how I started out with this. She was very open to our personal perspectives of what we saw. What she really wanted to see was that we were actually doing something and trying to create something new. And that openness and that ability to have free rein with what was going on in your head to get it out on paper was something that I will treasure forever, because she was just an absolutely wonderful instructor that was right there to answer any questions and help out and give guidance. And I still have contact with her even now after almost a whole year, and she's been one of my most biggest supporters, and she just was truly a godsend in the way she taught.
Do you ever have writer's block?
I have not yet. So knock on wood, I hope that doesn't happen. Because again, I see it in my head. I mean, even before I finished Accountable to None, I knew that I was going to have a sequel. I knew how it was going to end, and I knew what I wanted to put out in the second book. So far, I have not had that problem, because, like I said, it's like watching a movie that's playing in my head, and it just requires me to take time to sit down and write out the scenes.
That's wonderful. I mean, to have that kind of access to your creative power so fluently.
I have been very blessed so far when this part of my life opened up, because, as I said earlier, I've always liked to write. I have done so for years with personal emails and conversations, and I wrote a memoir that was basically for my family. I've always liked to write poetry. As a matter of fact, the very first thing I ever wrote, I was 20 years old and my best friend was going through a really hard time, and I wrote her a poem called Troubles, about relying on God when troubles come in your life. And so it's always been a part of me. It's just not something that I ever was truly willing to share with the masses.
So do you write every day?
Yes, just about. If not every day, every other day.
Don't let too much time pass between those moments at the computer. What is your favorite time of day or way of writing?
Well, I am not a morning person. Anybody that knows me is laughing as soon as I said that because morning is not my time. I'm a grump when I get up and have to go to work. My favorite time to sit and write is at night because I've had all day long, especially on my drive, to think about what I want to do next. And so when I get home, that is the time that I come alive and the computer screen lights up and the keys start flying. So,
what are you going to do when you don't have to commute to work anymore?
I don't know. Who knows? I might write about 10 or 15 books in 1 year. I don't know. I'd like to find out, though.
You might take just drives just to get the creative juices flowing.
Well, maybe if I do end up having writer's block, I'll just get in the car and start driving.
It sounds like that's your muse there. It's a perfect little time to get it all straight before you go to paper. Are there any words of advice or wisdom that you'd like to share just with the reading populace out there?
Well, just don't give up and, you know, take the good reviews along with the bad because you cannot truly appreciate a glowing five-star review until you've received a one-star that makes you just want to crawl under the bed and cry for days. Those things don't mean as much to you. It's like a beautiful woman or child that constantly hears how beautiful they are. It doesn't really mean a whole lot until someone comes along and tells you that you're not.
Hmm.
Don't be afraid because you'll be really surprised that there are going to be other people out there that enjoy what you took the time to write down. Some people may and some people may not, and that's just the way life is. But don't let that stop you.
Great reviews here on your website, too, that people have really expressed a lot of love for your work.
No, it's awesome.
We've got a page turner unlike anything since The Firm.
I know.
That's a great compliment.
Some of them, when they first started coming through, I was in tears. I was so happy because it took a lot for me to write this book. It delved in some issues. Like I said, I had several friends that have suffered being raped. And so it took a lot out of me emotionally to write this book. And to know that people enjoyed my work was just, it was just overwhelming. And I'm still, I still to this day am overwhelmed and so grateful, not only for the fans and the readers, but also I have met some incredible people through the groups that I'm on Facebook and on Twitter. I have had some support from them. I've met some great people on Goodreads. I've also had the chance to, I have a blog now, and so I also try to help out as many newcomers as I can because God knows I needed the help when I first started, which technically I really am still in the first starting stage, but I've had a chance to spotlight some great authors. William Talcott has wrote a fantastic sci-fi novel called The Mission, Remnants of the Past that I just loved. Of course, Lindsay Ann Kendall through World Castle has a Bloodlines trilogy, which is, if you like to read young adult paranormal, she's great. Some of the more hilarious books that I've read, one of them is by Lawrence Fisher. It's called Kill Me Now. And it's a guy's perspective of the dating world. So I have met some really fantastic people that have not only helped me out through my writing, but have also been there to help support me as I try to support them. So it has been an absolutely wonderful ride that I would not have changed, bad reviews and all, for anything.
How awesome has your family been through the process?
Oh, my God. They have been absolutely incredible. My husband has been my rock the entire time and has been right there with me as I started writing all this. And I have a 22-year-old son. And as you know, listeners out there, 22-year-old males are really not interested in much of anything. but he has been overwhelmed and shocked and is so proud of me. And that, for me personally, to have my child tell me, wow, Mom, I'm really impressed, I'm really proud of you, money can't buy that. That has been an absolutely incredible thing. My friends and my family that have been with me from the very beginning and supporting me in doing this have just been absolutely a huge blessing, and, you know, standing there on the sidelines cheering me on as I go, and it's just been an overwhelming experience of so many emotions that all of them are worth it.
You have on your page a YouTube video.
Yes.
What is that exactly?
Well, I as I was trying to promote this, I saw a lot of people were doing book trailers, and I decided that I needed to do one. So I figured out how to use Windows Media Maker, and I made my own. I did contact a couple people that do that for a living, and one of them actually sent me a draft of what she envisioned, but of course she hadn't read the book. And when I watched it, I said, no, that's not getting across what I wanted and what I envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the time. It took me about 2 weeks to figure out how to do it, and I made my own. And that book trailer is really what ended up launching me to where I'm at now, because it is so powerful.
Well, that's great. That's a really good idea. I don't know if a lot of authors have done that for themselves. I think you should probably suggest that.
A lot of self-published authors are.
Yeah.
A lot of them are doing that now. And because, I mean, if you stop and think about it, when you're watching TV, how many times do you see a 30 to 40 second, maybe even up to a minute blurb about a new movie? I mean, it catches
right.
people's attention. And when I saw that people were starting to do this, I said, you know what? I need to do that. So I did.
I think it's just a great idea.
Oh, it's a fantastic idea because, you know, it gives you the ability to, you have to be kind of careful because you don't want, as I had said earlier, when people read a book, they get a mental image of what the characters look like. So if you put a video up that has portrayals of your character, you may mess the reader's head up when they read it and think, well, that's not at all what I saw this person as. So I tried not to put true images of the faces of individuals and made it more about the events of what happened to Audra. But it has been a fantastic tool for me to use. So I enjoyed that.
I haven't got a chance to listen to it yet. Is it audio or is it mostly like a reading?
It is images that are coupled with a music. Actually, the music is Evanescence, Bring Me Back to Life.
Okay.
And it's the visual images, and then there's a little bit of the wording that comes in between each one that talks. The video is done from the perspective of Audra, of how, you know, 6 years ago she was anticipating the birth of her child, and then she loses the child, she goes into depression, her husband leaves her, she throws herself into her job, and then finds out that life is ugly, and after suffering her rape, her mindset shifts, and she focuses solely for the next 5 years on getting revenge.
A truly suspenseful and intriguing story, and I'm sure that many, many people have already enjoyed it, and many more will.
I hope so.
You've done almost everything right, it seems like, in the process of writing this book, and I congratulate you. I think you're going to go far.
Well, thank you very much. I have definitely tried. It has been an interesting walk, that's for sure.
Well, keep up the good work. I look forward to seeing more from you, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. How important is a good attitude towards finding success?
If you don't have a good attitude, you may as well not even start, because you have to have that positive attitude, and you have to have people that are willing to be positive alongside with you to keep you afloat during when the hard times come.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on with us today, Ashley, and when your next book comes out, please come back.
I would love to, and thank you so much again for having me. I really do appreciate it. I've enjoyed it very much.
Likewise. Tune in every week as we interview new authors and guests here on Authors First. The book is Accountable to None by Ashley Fontaine, and that's Fontaine with two N's in case you're spelling it out, Fontaine. And Accountable to None on Amazon.com. Check it out. You can either get it as an ebook or buy the physical copy there. And thank you again, Ashley, for joining us.
I appreciate it. You have a great evening.
Take care.